Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Winging It in Motown Radio, therapy edition. Just so everyone knows, this is a safe space, so please lie down on the couch and join us for this conversation. Kyle, Graham, JJ, all with us this week, including myself. I'm Jeff. How you guys doing?
I'd like to lie to you and say it's the greatest night ever, but In terms of hockey events, it's not. I just witnessed the Blackhawks choke away a game against the Flyers that knocked the Red Wings out of the playoffs. Personal life's going real good, though, so that's positive.
There you go.
The Griffins are winning, so, I mean, I'm okay, kind of. Not really.
Future so bright, gotta wear shades.
But see, if the Griffins win, it's just kind of setting the bar too high. They'll just be disappointed when all those kids get called up.
It's true.
Man, this is depressing, huh? Is this what it's like to be the Avalanche?
No. This is what it's like to be the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, the Avs have, I don't know. The Avs have gone numb to this kind of hurt by now.
Yeah. I don't know. It is what it is. It's just the Flyers are playing. It's like we were saying before the podcast. They're not getting lucky. They're just legitimately playing really, really good hockey. And I kind of think that they might get blasted in the first round. But who knows? I mean, they're climbing the standing, so they might get a good matchup. But I kind of feel like it's going to end up being the Capitals. And if so, then, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Who knows? But, you know, that's just all hypothetical.
Just going back.
I don't think the Flyers are good enough to hang with the top teams.
No.
I don't think the Red Wings are either, but no. I at least want the chance.
Yeah, everybody wants a chance.
I was just going to say, going back to the actual game Tuesday night, quite the inspiring performance. What are your just thoughts for how lackluster of a start it was? Like, you knew how important this game was going into it. That's what we get in the first period. Like, just what are your thoughts, or what do you take away from that? Like, with the leadership on this team, I mean, you could say, okay, they have a young coach, but it's not like there isn't some guys in the room that have been around the block once or twice.
Yeah. You know, if you go back, what was it, three seasons when they were like, the Red Wings were...
It's the last year in the West, right?
Yes. And they had to, like, it came down to the very last game. And, you know, that was when Zetterberg was like, you know, we're not missing the playoffs on my watch and all that stuff. And he went out and he played his ass off. I mean, I don't know. The team looks... I want to believe that could happen again, but the team looks way different right now. I mean, they're not... I don't know. Everybody wants to blame Blashill because whatever, but at some point you really do need to look at the actual personnel, the roster. It's like, they're not scoring. They're not doing what they need to do. They don't even look like they're fighting for their playoff lives right now, in my opinion.
Okay, but who, not necessarily the coach, but who do you put blame for that on? Because you can look at this roster on paper, and it's not like there isn't talent there. So what's the problem?
they're just not, I don't, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's got to be some sort of intangible, like, they're just not playing inspired hockey.
Like,
I
can't literally imagine they're like, oh, it's an important game, whatever, we don't care. Like, as much as we watch that and we say, like, oh, they're playing like they don't give a fuck, like, that's clearly, I can't imagine that's actually true, that they go on the ice and they just don't give a flying fuck.
No, so, that's not happening. I mean, they're trying. The problem is that they're not executing. They're not playing well. They can talk about, I mean, I think they said that they, you know, the first 5 minutes were good and then they got scored on and then they fell apart. But that's not new. I mean, that's not new to this year, that they've had these rough starts or didn't start on time or anything. It's baffling that it's happening at this time of year, but I think part of it is other teams, they're just playing really well. They're in that weird part of their schedule where they're playing a team, Philly, who's trying to get into the playoffs, and then they're playing teams like Columbus and Toronto, who have given up on the season, and those teams always seem to play better at the end of the year because there's no pressure, right? You've got all these young kids in Toronto that have come up, and Babcock knows how to beat the Red Wings. And then Columbus, they've actually played well over the last little bit under Tortorella. So I think what you're seeing is just, they're a mediocre team. And mediocre teams have inconsistent performances, which is why they can look like an amazing team against the Rangers and then look like horseshit against the worst team in the league the very next night. It's just, you just don't know. It's been the team all season. I think it's just the lack of talent.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways for a team to look bad, and obviously you never know which one is it, because you're not privy to the locker room, so it's a case of we've all got to speculate and guess, and obviously the easiest thing to do is say, oh, they don't care, they don't have heart, they don't have balls, which I've seen on the site, and I don't believe that. If you think that they're going out to, and they're like, whatever, we don't care if we don't start well against Philly, I that's just the end of the conversation for me. I do not care about that opinion whatsoever. But you got to come up with something in there, and I think there's a bunch of different reasons that could happen. One is a concept of essentially trying to be too professional. You don't want to let your emotions get the best of you, so you try to kind of limit that and then just play a little bit robotic, and then essentially the other team, which is using their emotions and are really well, then the Philly is in a zone right now. They just are playing extremely well, and so you get that where you're trying not to go out there and overdo it, because the other side of the coin is you go out there, you let your emotions go and you play reckless, and we've seen the Red Wings play like that recently too. And so it's just trying to put it all together, and I think the biggest thing right now is that they are not confident as a group. It's showing in the passes that they're not making. It's showing in what looks like, it almost feels like they complete two passes in a row and they want to pat themselves on the back for doing it. It's like, no, you still have to fucking score a goal, guys. They're still not shooting it fast enough. They're trying to pick corners. It's just, nothing is coming easy right now. They're just basically the opposite of getting into that zone where everything is just easy and the no-looks are working well, and you snap a shot off and it tends to go in, or you try to pass it in the front of the net, it goes off a guy's freaking knee into the goal for the game winner. Shit like that, just, it comes and goes, and right now it's fucking gone for the Red Wings. And yeah, they've got to find that right balance of letting enough of the emotions out to play charged up without being reckless, because you find yourself in the exact same hole and you don't climb back from, once you flip the reckless switch, if you keep going that and you're down 2-0, you're not coming back from that.
Yeah. It's funny because the Red Wings have always kind of played this, they've always played the opposite role of what they're playing right now in past years. You know, they kind of find themselves underachieving, and then at this point of the season, they really fire up. They fire up, and you know they start playing better. And it's just, I mean, obviously things can change. You have 12 games left. You can still very much make the playoffs, but from what we've seen, it's not exactly inspiring as a person who watches every game as a fan. There's nothing really showing me that it's gonna happen. But you know, that's just me being pessimistic right now. I don't know. They could come out and they could win against Columbus, and they could turn the page and really start going. But I don't know. I don't know if it's going to happen. We will see, though.
It's hard to be inspired by the way they've played over the last couple of weeks. I mean, outside of the Ranger game, every other game they've played recently has involved a good chunk of the game where they just looked lost,
mm-hmm.
or overwhelmed or overmatched or whatever word you want it, or just bad. Usually it has been the first period, and that these starts are killing them because they fall behind quickly, and they just, you know, you have to spend so much energy just, you know, kind of clawing back and getting back into the game. And that's been as far back as the Stadium Series game. I think the last game the Wings led or never trailed that I can remember was the Dallas game. That was, what, over 2 weeks ago? It was day of the trade deadline or day after or something? I mean, they're just... You look at them and go, man, you're not playing good hockey at all right now. And yet, we've seen it this year where they can get on a run. I mean, they still have that ability, and you never know. I mean, it was a couple of years ago they went on that insane run at the end of the year to make the playoffs. They were out of it, I think around this time. They were certainly out of it later in the year and looking like they were going to miss, and they went on that crazy run and ended up making it. So, I mean, their schedule sets up favorably because they have a number of home games left. They still have a game against the Flyers.
Pittsburgh as well.
And they still have a game against Pittsburgh. So they have games with the two teams directly in front of them with the ability to earn back some of those points and make up some of those points. You lose those games, you're in deep shit. I mean, it doesn't even matter what they do.
Seven road games left.
Yeah. So they've got Columbus. I mean, they have teams on their schedule that they should beat. I mean, they've got Montreal twice.
We usually look Buffalo. Ahead. Later, I was just saying, it's kind of every other. You have Columbus, who playing well but is a bad team. Then you have Florida. Then you have Tampa. Then you go Montreal. Then Pittsburgh, and then Buffalo and Montreal again. So it's like you're getting good, bad, it seems like, about every other game here the rest of the month.
Yeah, and then you get, you know, they play Bruins one more time, but that's going to be towards the end of the year, and who knows? I mean, the Bruins might be still fighting for the division, or they might be locked in with the
second night of a back-to-back on the road after you play Philly at home.
So you win the Philly game. You hope for the Philly game. So, and Philly and Pittsburgh still have to play three times, too. So
three overtime games.
It's gonna be three overtime games. If you hope that there are no overtime games in that,
hope is not a strategy.
Hope a dangerous thing. The ideal in that situation is one of the teams wins all three.
In regulation, out of
those three.
At this point, doesn't matter who.
No, because you're chasing both of them.
I mean, you'd rather it be Philly because you're closer to them, but.
Yeah, but I mean, if Philly wins their next game, they're tied with Pittsburgh.
Right. Pittsburgh would have a game in hand, obviously. But
Pittsburgh would have their game in hand. They have the regulation overtime win tiebreaker currently.
Right. And goal differential. Was that the third tiebreaker?
I think goal differential is further down. I think it's divisional record is next.
Okay.
Maybe I'm thinking NFL.
Graham, did you ever finalize or figure out what the magic number was?
Yes. So, the Red Wings' magic number to clinch a playoff
69.
Spot. 420. is 25. 25 points. They have 12 games left.
So do the math.
They need some help. They do the math. So yeah, they're in some trouble. Their max points they can get is 103 points. Right now, Philly max points is 106. So they got to make up some ground here. Pittsburgh can get to 108. It's weird to say this. If the Red Wings can get a run and win a couple of key games, Tampa's only 6 points ahead of them. It's not 100% out of the realm of possibility. It's more of the long shot.
I mean, you got to win that game in Tampa on the 22nd, about a week from today.
Yeah, you lose that game. If they lose the two games in Florida, getting back into the top three in the division
now,
is gone.
Of course, and you say that as well, but what, Boston is what, 7 ahead, but you have a game in hand, so.
Game in hand, and they're.
So you win that game in hand, you're 5 back of Boston. Not out of the question.
There's a lot that has to happen. You focus on.
And if you look at, you're only 8 behind Florida, so. And I don't know where Washington's at, but I don't think you're catching them.
Washington is officially ahead. They cannot be caught by the Red Wings. They have 105 points.
Yeah. Way to be a downer, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks. Could catch every other team, though.
Dick.
Not Washington. They're done. Actually, interesting. Washington can get to 131 points. That's their max points this year. Would the Red Wings have 100? Were they 132? What was their record?
Yeah, I don't remember off the top of my head. They had 62 wins.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm not gonna like. Prashant kind of pointed it out earlier.
You guys jumped off the ledge together?
No. Prashant pointed it out earlier. I'm going to do my best and try to not worry about the playoffs. I'm going to try and just enjoy what I can. If they make it, great. If they don't, whatever. Because lately I've been watching the games and I have been miserable doing it. And that's just like, it seems not worth it. So, and counterproductive. So I'm going to try and enjoy whatever I can. If they make it, great. If they don't, then whatever. See, but
I'm going to
tell you honestly, Kyle, it showed.
It's what?
It's shown that you haven't been enjoying watching the
game. Yeah, no, it's been. Yeah, so I'm going to try and change it up there and just try and pull whatever I can from it. But unless they just completely bottom the hell out and just keep going like how they have been, then yeah. Whatever.
I'm going to do the exact opposite, and I'm going to be on the ledge, off the ledge, on the edge, off the ledge, watching every single game that might have some kind of potential playoff impact and being angry and bitter every time things don't go their way.
Oh, yeah.
And, and it's mainly because I'm not that young, but I don't know how I'm going to actually react when it happens of them missing the playoffs. Like,
yeah,
I was 2 last time it happened, or 3, and it was like, I've had teams in other sports that have missed the playoffs and not won games in an entire season, but I didn't care about those teams as much as I did this. So I'm still just kind of, I don't know how it's all going to unfold with everything, unless they just do completely bottom out, and then I can just embrace the late season tank and we can get Austin Matthews. So
I'll tell you what I'm going to do is I'm going to continue monitoring the whim mentions during games, even though it makes me want to step into traffic. Like, God, I mean, you guys think that you're bad. The fans in general are just brutal.
Now I'll say this.
I put out the second period is about to start. Just a basic, like, hey, if you're not watching, it's been 17 minutes since the first period ended, so, you know, change back or pay attention. And I used to get a whole bunch of, like, oh, thank you, I really appreciate that. And now it's like, fuck, no. Like, you don't watch then. I don't care. But leave me alone.
See, the difference is we're just as bad. You just kind of like us, so you put up with it.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, they just need a player like Nyquist to go on a ridiculous, or whoever, to go on a ridiculous goal-scoring tear and just lead us in, but I don't know. I don't know if that's going to happen. So,
well, speaking of things that happened, Anthony Mantha made his NHL debut. I don't know what the fuck
Dude,
that
you're was. Getting lazy.
Just like the Red Wings.
Not starting on time, Jeff.
Yeah.
let's try to not have everyone crying in this podcast and sad and depressed, but he didn't play that bad. Like, what were your overall impressions of this?
No, he played downright. He played well. It wasn't he did well. Not that bad. He had a good game.
Mm-hmm. He looked fine. I mean, first couple of shifts, there were some jitters. You'd expect it. I mean, you think about the situation he's being thrown into as well. I mean, this isn't the first game of the year playing, you know, garbage Toronto. Oh, this is like, hey, this is the most important game of the season. Oh, and we can't score, so guess what? We're calling you up and putting you on the top line. He handled it fine. I thought he had probably the best chances out of anybody who didn't actually score yesterday. He had the post, and he had the one there where his stick broke. Couple of decisions that he made with the puck that, you got to clean up. I think there were a couple where he either took a shot or he was in position to take a shot, or there was a loose puck, and he just kind of threw it towards the net, but without any real purpose, and it was very easily blocked and turned over. So, but I mean, it's his first game. You kind of expect something like that. I mean, I'm sure they told him, put the puck on the net. Just if you get the puck, throw it on the net. So I thought he was good. I'm excited to see how he follows that up. Because, I mean, I'm sure there was a lot of adrenaline being the first game. We'll see how he looks in the next game, but I think it was a good start.
Yeah, what I really liked is that he did use his size. He got off the puck a couple of times, but that was because he was like trying to do a crossover move, and he got his skates too close together, like right as a defenseman is coming on him. And that's just something that you learn, is that when you're battling for a puck in the corner, you can't get your skates that close together. You're going down. But like, he's taking board battles against Claude Giroux in his very first NHL game, and he's holding his own pretty well. I thought he did really well with that. Plus, there was the near break where he broke a stick, and then the other break. He was smartly cherry picking, because those were plays where he absolutely should have been the guy flying away, and he did. That was something that we saw a lot out of Pulkkinen early on, and I'm hoping it doesn't happen with Mantha, where it gets essentially trained out of him. But I really like that part. Yeah, I mean, he had a few chances where he basically made an AHL play. He's got a little predilection towards slappers that. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just forwards don't score on that very, very often. It's not a scoring play in the NHL. So, other than that, I thought he played really well, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of it.
Yeah, I'm gonna try and enjoy him just being here.
It's Kyle's motto.
I'm gonna try and enjoy it. He played 15 minutes or over 15 minutes against the Flyers, and I mean, that's encouraging that he's actually being put in the position that a player like him needs to be in. You know, it's not like one of those, oh, we'll call you up and we'll play it for 6 minutes. No, we're going to throw you to the wolves, and you're either going to sink or you're going to swim. And so far, he's swimming.
I mean, they said he wasn't going to play unless he was going to supplant somebody on the, in the top lines. And I mean, he did. So, I mean, I didn't want to see Mantha called up to play fourth line garbage minutes. I mean, that's, although he wouldn't make the fourth one any worse. But no, it's exciting to see. They've got a young player on each of their top three lines. If they would play that third line, that might actually make a difference. But, you know, whatever.
Whatever is the word of the podcast.
Whatever.
Whatever. I mean, I look at it like this. If they make it into the playoffs, that's probably going to be as an eighth seed, unless it just gets ridiculous. But and then you draw Washington, and that's not something that I'm going to find very much fun watching. So,
well, speaking of things that are fun watching, the Griffins have been fun to watch lately because they actually score goals and win games. And Michelle's going to tell us all about it in the prospects report. Go, Michelle.
It's all about the wins for the Grand Rapids Griffins. You'll have to go all the way back to February 19th in order to find their last loss. They won their last 11 games now, and they've won all three games over the weekend. What's even more impressive is that in those 11 games they've won, they've only given up a total of 11 goals. However, they've scored a staggering 45 on their opponents, and they've only given up one goal in their last four road games. Friday night at home, the Griffins spanked the last place Manitoba Moose 7-2 and outshot them 35-22. Eric Tangrady had a 5-point night with 2 goals and 3 assists. Robbie Russo and Andy Mealy each had a goal and 3 assists for a 4-point night. And Anthony Mantha had a 3-point night with a goal and 2 assists, with Xavier Ouellette tallying 2 assists himself. Mitch Callahan got a major elbowing penalty and a game misconduct to go along with it, so he had to miss the final 14 minutes of the game. The Moose, who had been unable to solve Jared Corral for their first 45 minutes, got 2 power play goals on that major penalty to Cali, and kept Corral from getting his 6th shutout of the season. The teams got a rematch on Saturday night in Grand Rapids, but the Moose didn't fare much better. The Griffins once again beat them, this time by a score of 5-1, while being outshot 33-31. Tangrady and Mealy each had 2 points and continued to rack up their team lead in points. The Red Wings' newly signed defenseman out of the University of Maine, Dan Renouf, made his Griffins debut in the game. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to watch it or listen, so I can't provide much insight into how his pro debut went. We'll have to wait for his next game for that. However, he did have 2 shots on goal and didn't register a point in the game. Sunday, the Griffins traveled to Chicago to take on the Wolves, and they beat them 4-0 despite being outshot 45-27. Marty Furt gave the Griffins a 1-0 lead just 8:56 into the first period on the power play, with Anthony Mantha and Andy Mealy setting it up. The Griffins played a bit sloppier in the second period, and it felt like a close game with the Wolves starting to take over at times, but the Griffins managed to get out of that period not only with the lead, but also increasing their lead. They went up 2-0 thanks to Marty Furk's 2nd goal of the game, and Jared Cora was outstanding, having to face far more shots than he should have. With just under 5 minutes into the third period, Andy Mealy gave the Griffins a 3-0 lead with a shorthanded goal, and then just over a minute later, Anthony Mantha was sprung for a breakaway by Ryan Spruill from behind the Griffins' net, and boom, 4-0 Griffins. And that's the way it would stay. Looking at the final score, 4-0 is deceptive when it comes to how challenged Jared Corwell was in this game. He had to make 45 saves, and there were multiple stretches in the game where he was under siege, with his defense making some questionable decisions, and just the Wolves pouring it on, trying to get anything past him. But Coro held strong, came up huge for his team, and he earned that 45-save shutout. He also, with that 6th shutout of the season, tied the Griffins franchise record for single-season shutouts. With his next one, and I do think there will be a next one, he'll be the new Griffins franchise record holder. Coro's save percentage continues to climb, and with a .931 on the season, he's 2nd in the league and only 0.1% behind league leader Peter Budaj with .932. And he's only 2 shutouts behind the NHL veteran, and Coro's 2.15 goals against average is 2nd best in the league, 2nd best only to Peter Budaj. So, by all accounts and measurements, Coro's the 2nd best goalie in the entire American Hockey League, and he's only being beat out currently by an NHL veteran. Colin Campbell was injured Friday night, so Zach Nastasiak was recalled from Toledo, and he did play in the game on Sunday. With the Griffins having so many veterans on the team now, it has been a somewhat of a rotation of healthy scratches. Nathan Page, Jeff Hogan, Dan Cleary, and Joachim Andersen have all been healthy scratched in order to comply with the veteran rule. The 3 games over the weekend that the Griffins won, they outscored their opponents 16-3. In those 3 games, Robbie Russo had a goal and 4 assists, Mantha had 3 goals and 3 assists, Mealy had 2 goals and 6 assists, and Tangrady had 3 goals and 4 assists. Marty Furk had 3 goals, Tyler Bertuzzi had 2, and Jared Coro made 65 saves on 67 shots. So the Griffins' top line of Eric Tangrady, Andy Mealy, and Anthony Mantha in the last 3 games have combined for 21 points. How's that for top-line production? Neely still leads the team in points with 50, followed by Tangrady with 46, Mantha with 45, Zengerly with 40, and Ferk with 38. Ferky still leads the team in goals with 25, followed by Tangrady at 22, Mantha at 21, and Mitch Callahan with 16. The Griffins set a franchise record with their 15-game win streak earlier in the season, and they now have an 11-game win streak going. They are the first team since the Hershey Bears in 2009-2010 to have two separate 10-plus game win streaks in the same season. Fun fact, the Bears also went on to win the Calder Cup that season. Not putting the expectations out there, I'm just saying. All this winning the Griffins have been doing has propelled them to first in the Central Division with 80 points and second in the Western Conference, so their playoff hopes are looking pretty good, and that's a far cry from the beginning of the season when I really didn't know if they would even come close. The Griffins' upcoming schedule sees them playing their next four games on the road. They take on the Texas Stars on Wednesday night, then again Saturday night, and then visit the San Antonio Rampage on Sunday afternoon, and then again Tuesday night. The Texas Stars have scored the second most goals in the league, but they've also given up the second most goals against in the league, so it should be an exciting game on the road for the Griffins. On a related note, you guys may remember a couple months ago during a Griffins game when forward Alden Hirschfeld suffered a scary seizure on the bench. He hasn't played a game since then, and there hasn't been a lot in the way of updates about his status, but we did recently get some news. He's going to be undergoing brain surgery in Grand Rapids to remove a malformation in his brain that he and the doctors hope will stop the seizures altogether. Hirschfeld said he's thinking both about hockey and the future of what he called his normal life. His hope is that he'll be able to have a normal lifestyle, spend time with his wife and his daughter, and not worry about having seizures. He's played parts the last three seasons with the Toledo Walleye, and he says he's hoping to be able to continue his hockey career in the Wings organization next year. Doctors say his anticipated recovery time after the surgery is about 6 months, so hopefully everything will go smoothly, and by next season, he'll be ready to play again. So we wish him a speedy, full recovery and the best to him and his family. Speaking of the Walleye, down in Toledo, the Walleye won two of their three games over the weekend, getting a 2-1 win over the Wheeling Nailers on Friday, a 2-1 overtime win over the Norfolk Admirals on Sunday, and then suffering a 4-3 loss to the Kalamazoo Wings on Sunday. Jake Patterson made 29 saves on 30 shots in the 2-1 shootout win over Wheeling on Sunday, and then made 25 saves on 29 shots in the 4-3 loss to Kalamazoo on Sunday. The Walleye still sit atop the Eastern Conference with 83 points and are second in the ECHL behind only the Western Conference Missouri Mavericks, who have a whopping 97 points. The Walleye get a few nights off after playing 3 games in 3 nights, and they're on the road to take on the Indy Fuel on Thursday night, then host the Brampton Beast on Friday, and then the Evansville Icemen on Saturday for another 3 games in 3 nights. Billy Sarjarvi and the Flint Firebirds won one out of their 3 games last week, with a 5-3 win over the Erie Otters on Wednesday. Billy had a power play goal and an assist in the win. Unfortunately, they lost their next 2 games, falling 5-1 to the Niagara Ice Dogs on Thursday and 7-2 to the Kitchener Rangers on Saturday. Sarjarvi had an assist in 5 shots on goal in the 7-2 loss. Billy's third on his team in points with 41, first in power play goals with 8, and first in shots with 202, and he's 10th among all OHL defensemen and scoring with his 41 points. I've talked about this all season long, but those kind of stats from a defenseman is very complimentary. The Firebirds have long been out of the playoff race, and with only 3 games left in their season, the countdown until Sarjarvi joins either the Griffins or the Walleye is on. Flint's last game is this Saturday the 19th, and hopefully we'll hear very soon after that where he'll be playing. Over in the QMJHL, Adam Marsh didn't play in any of the St. John Sea Dogs' 3 games last week, but with 89 points on the season, the Sea Dogs have clinched both a playoff spot and the Maritimes division. They have 2 regular season games left, and then their playoff start. Evgeny Svechnikov had a lone assist in 2 games last week, and he and the Screamin' Eagles have clinched home ice in the first round of the playoffs with their 78 points. Svechnikov sits 19th in QMJHL scoring with 75 points, and he has 32 goals and 43 assists. Something that sticks out to me as a red flag is that he also has 95 penalty minutes, which is 23rd in the league, and it's one of the areas he's going to need to improve upon next year in Grand Rapids. Racking up those kind of pims aren't going to help the team, and he won't get away with the same amount of stuff in the AHL as players do in the Q. Just for some context, both Marty Ferk and Anthony Mantha had noticeably high pims when they came to the A, and they had to work hard to cut down on them. And neither Mantha nor Ferk had as high pim levels in the Q as Svechnikov did this season. Chevy's going to be in for a big learning experience when he comes to the AHL next year, that's for sure. Every year, the Cape Breton Screamin' Eagles hold an annual banquet to honor players who've won awards in the season. This year, Evgeny Svechnikov shared the team MVP award with Pierre-Luc Dubois, and Svechnikov was also awarded the Greg Lynch Memorial Trophy for leadership. When he went up to receive his leadership award, he said, "I want to thank everybody for my time here. This has been the right place for me for the past 2 years." According to the Red Wings, this is Svechnikov's final year in the QMJHL as he'll be headed to Grand Rapids next year, so it was a good way for him to wrap up the regular season. Out in the Western Hockey League, Joe Hickett's picked up 2 more assists in 2 games last week in Victoria's 2 wins. He has 57 points on the season in 56 games, which is 7th among all Western Hockey League defensemen, and his 49 assists are 15th most in the league among all players, and he's also 7th in power play assists in the entire league among all players, and he has 23. The Royals have 3 games left before they kick off the playoffs, and their 100 points leads the entire league, so they're obviously in a playoff spot. Dominic Turgeon had 3 goals and 4 points in 4 games last week, and with 2 goals and 1 assist in a 5-2 win over the Giants, he was the first star of the game. With 66 points in 69 games this season, Dom is 36th in Western Hockey League scoring, 15th in power play goals with 12, and is first on his team in points, goals with 34, power play goals with 12, shorthanded goals with 3, plus minus at plus 7, and has the 5th lowest penalty minutes among all Portland skaters who have played at least 40 games this season. He's only taken 11 minor penalties, and for the top line center who plays a ton of time on ice in every situation, that's a testament to his discipline and approach to how he plays the game. The Winterhawks have 73 points and with 3 games left are in a playoff spot, but they haven't clinched like most of the other teams. In the BCHL, Chase Perry and the Wenatchee Wild will advance to the second round of their playoffs. Perry started 4 of their 5 playoff games against the Langley Rivermen. He has a 3-1-0 record in those 4 starts, and he has 1 shutout, a .914 save percentage, and a 2.42 goals against average. In college hockey, James DeHaas and the Clarkson Golden Knights lost both the ECAC quarterfinal games versus St. Lawrence University. They both came in overtime by identical scores of 3-2. DeHaas had an assist and 1 shot on goal in the first game, and a lone shot, and was a -1 in the second game. Clarkson's season is now over, but in 4 playoff games, DeHaas had 2 goals, which were both overtime winners, had an assist, and 7 shots on goal. From the blue line, that's not bad at all. Mike McKee and Western lost both their playoff games versus St. Cloud State, and their season is now over. McKee had an assist and was a -1 in a 4-3 overtime loss in Game 1, and he had 4 penalty minutes and 1 shot in a 4-2 loss in Game 2. David Pope and the University of Omaha, Nebraska lost both of their playoff games versus the Denver Pioneers over the weekend, and their season is now over as well. They were swept in the first round, which is an unfortunate way to go. In 4 playoff games, Pope had 4 shots on goal, 2 penalty minutes, and was a -3. Over in Europe, Christopher N has played a lot of hockey this season. He played 13 games with Karlskoga and tallied 2 goals and 3 assists. He played 37 games with Frölunda HC in the SHL and tallied 2 points with them. He also played 14 games with Frölunda junior team in the Super Elite program and had 9 goals and 7 assists. Plus, he played in the World Juniors and the Champions Hockey League. He's currently playing with the Junior 20 team and the SHL team in the playoffs, and he helped the Junior 20 team advance to the second round by scoring 2 goals in a 5-3 win in the 2nd of 2 games. So he played 1 of their 2 games and had 2 goals in that game. And also played in Frölunda's first playoff game in the SHL. In a 4-2 win, he had 2 shots and was a +1 in 10 minutes and 1 second of ice time, and was 77.78% in the faceoff circle, which, although it's very early in the playoffs and many players have only played 1 game, is actually the best faceoff percentage in the entire SHL right now. And he's currently playing as their 3rd-line center. Axel Holmstrom and Schleftia also made the playoffs, and he finished the regular season with 8 goals and 15 assists, which puts him at 23 points in 48 games, so he was 2nd in the SHL among junior players' points, and was tied for 2nd place in goals. He was 1st in power play goals among junior players with 4, and 2nd in the faceoff circle at 49.63%. Schleftia kicked off their playoffs Wednesday in a 6-1 win over HV71, and Holmstrom had a goal and an assist in 10 minutes and 29 seconds of ice time, and he was 71.4% in the faceoff circle as their 4th-line center. Again, very early in the playoffs, but that faceoff percentage is the 3rd best in the entire SHL. Over in the Finnish league, Julius Vaatalo finished the regular season with 9 goals and 13 points for TPS in 49 games. He had a goal and 5 assists in 3 games with the Junior 20 TPS team.
TPS is currently in the playoffs, and they won both their first-round matchups, and they will play Carpat in the next round. Vaatalo played in one of TPS's first-round games and registered a lone shot on goal and played 11 minutes and 28 seconds. In the KHL, Alexander Kadykin finished the regular season with 5 goals and 6 assists in 48 games for SKA St. Petersburg. He's only played in 3 of his team's 10 playoff games, and in those 3 games, he's a minus 3 and has 2 shots on goal. He's also 37.5 in the faceoff circle and is averaging 10 minutes and 20 seconds time on ice per game. Caveat to that time on ice, though, it's been dropping in each of the 3 games he played. So in the first game he played 16.5, the second one it was 9.5, and in the third game it was 4 minutes and 50 seconds. SKA is currently in a series against Dynamo Minsk and trails them 3-2 in the series. There has been a lot of controversy with that team and the players, with even Ilya Kovalchuk, who is their top line center and a star in this league, threatening to leave because he wasn't playing in the playoffs for them. So it's really hard to judge whether Kadykin has only played in a few games because he's dropped off, because he hasn't earned it, because he hasn't been that good, or if there's something else going on. He was Kovalchuk's center for quite a portion of the season, so it's really hard to tell, and I don't have full context on why he's only played so few games. So the playoffs are upon us for many of these prospects' teams, and it's an exciting time of season. Until next week, that's what's going on in the world of Red Wings prospects.
Thank you, Michelle. It's always nice to hear about hockey teams that win games. That's why we listen to these podcasts for to try to enjoy them. Let's just do mailbag things and questions because there were 76 comments, and I'm sure there's at least 2 questions that are good out of all that. So JJ, what do you got for us?
We got lots of good questions. First off, Holmstrom 96. It's not a question because he's got his joke trade proposal in there, but he does say we're all very brave and he loves us. So I just want to start off the mailbag portion on that.
We love you too.
Thank you.
And then he asks, would you rather fight a duck-sized Butters or a Butters-sized duck? And this is specifically Butters being Kyle's dog.
They're very... How different in size are they? Probably not very much, right? Possible.
The very first reply to that was Jay Stone's like... Basically, isn't that like you're fighting either Butters or a duck?
Right. I'd rather fight a duck.
I'd fight a duck because I like Butters a lot.
I'd never met Butters, but I've seen him a lot in pictures.
I wouldn't want to fight Butters. He's a good boy.
And I like Kyle, so.
Yeah, why would you fight a dog? I mean.
Well, I mean, I.
If I got to fight one, a dog or a duck.
When I was 7. I had a black lab jumped up and bit my cheek, and imagine maybe a fruit roll up, like the cheek just peeled down, and I had like stitches up my face, and my uncle put his dog down, and he like ripped my face open, and it was all bloody, and I didn't like dogs for a long time, so like if I could go back in time, I would have fought that dog.
Just punch him in the face. You stop it.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right.
That's a true story, by the way.
Well, I believe it.
So.
Okay, KSNG wants to play the hypothetical massive overhaul of the defense game by getting rid of Quincy, Erickson, and Cronwall. Yeah, that's not going to happen. But if the defense were built up of DeKaiser, Green, Smith, Marchenko, Xavier, Sproul, Jensen, Russo, would you be comfortable with that defense going into next season?
They are in a position where they are not going to be able to rebuild this defense over one off season. Whether they trade everybody or they don't, it's not that simple. I kind of went over this before. The only way that they're going to be able to really rebuild this blue line is that they're going to need to draft and develop and just kind of stay the course with that. And I don't know if there's any other way. Despite waiting out maybe one of the guys, like one of the bigger names, maybe hitting free agency in the future, Brent Burns, Eric Karlsson, Victor Hedman, which is a stretch.
Yep. All right. Question specifically for Kyle.
Ooh. Oh, goody.
Kyle, could you beat a duck-sized Tangrady with machete arms in a fight? You either get a large stick or a bunch of bread pieces as weapon.
Okay. Is it before or after a Red Wings game?
After.
Oh, then I would do it, and I would whoop its ass because we probably lost.
All right.
And I'd be really angry.
All right. Indy Wing 97. Assuming the Wings don't make the playoffs and the world ends, would you rather be the driver or the polecat in a Mad Max post-apocalyptic future?
God, I gotta remember what the
I didn't see Mad Max.
You either drive one of the cars, or you're one of the crazy guys that's like on the top of the long poles that tilt back and forth, like dropping grenades and shit on top of the.
Oh, I'd be the driver. I'm afraid of heights.
Yeah, because polecat, I had a different meaning in mind when I read that.
Polecat nin.
No, I was thinking more of a.
Like skunk.
I don't know. Throwing grenades and shit sounds fun. So I guess that guy.
I'd be the driver.
Yeah, I'd be a driver. I couldn't do the polecat shit.
What about the guy with the guitar? That guy was cool. I can't play guitar, but that'd be cool to do.
Yeah, but the case there is like that character was specifically wearing his mother's face as a mask, so would you do that?
Nope.
Yeah, it changes that.
Right, lots of jokes, Alan.
Next question.
Yeah, from the same person. On a more serious note, realistically, what the heck are we going to do with Riggy? Do we just have to suffer through the rest of his contract?
No.
I mean, you either suffer through the rest of his contract, or he gets taken by the Las Vegas Black Aces, or
Black Knight.
Someone takes a crowbar to his knee in the parking lot.
Yeah, literally, the chances that he could get taken in an expansion draft, I don't want to say they're good, but they're decent enough that that I'm okay with that. Or the chances that he just decides that his debilitating hip condition means he actually has to walk away from the money is essentially what's keeping me from jumping on the buy him out and suffer through the like $1.5 million cap hit for 8 years or whatever it is.
Yeah. I think that the chances of him getting drafted in an expansion draft are greater than him being traded.
Yeah.
I agree.
He could be traded because we've seen anybody
can get
traded. I don't see Holland. No.
Yeah. They seem to like him anyway.
Hey, how many expansion draft questions do we got?
Tons of them. So we'll.
I'll stop then. I won't ask any question here.
Do you think Larkin's production lately is more realistic of what's to expect from him? A goal every 5 or 6 games, which is 16 goals a year, or do you think the hot start was for real?
I think that in any case, with any player, it doesn't matter who it is, when you look at goal scoring in a vacuum, it is going to be streaky unless you are a guy like Alex Ovechkin who, you know, can score, or, you know, like an Alex Ovechkin or a Patrick Kane or whoever, you know, those goal scoring types. He's not one of those guys. And I'm just like, over the whole idea of, like, I don't know.
He's going to be a guy that's going to score 20 to 30 goals every year and hover around that area. Maybe 1 year or two he busts out and has a 35 or a 40. But ultimately, I just think what you're seeing this year is a kid who is legitimately a kid who has never played this many games and hitting that wall, that rookie wall, which is a real thing, and I believe that it's a real thing. And I mean, what do you play in college? You played like 30 games last year or something like that, 40 games with the playoff or the tournament, if Michigan, I don't even remember how far they went, but
I think you'll see his point totals increase. I think as he transitions over to center, you'll see his goals probably right around the same. He'll get more assists.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the thing is about Larkin, as while point production is obviously a premium for this team, I think, you know, putting up points is great, but he really has something else that really adds to the kind of player that he is for the team. Is when he's on the ice, he opens the ice up with his speed. And that is going to be something when he actually does transition to center. As he gets more experience, it could really become a game-changing, like, impact, you know, tangible. And additionally, just riffing off of the idea of, you know, what we spoke about, you know, him transitioning over center, I think the Red Wings should probably start doing that now.
Well, they have to do it next year. I mean, I don't want him to get so ingrained as being a winger that that's just kind of where he what he becomes.
I mean, he's not, like, he needs to be taking face-offs. He needs to be doing that stuff. He needs to be killing penalties more often. He needs to be playing, like, 20 minutes a night. He needs to be doing that stuff.
Yeah, so you look at Galchenyuk in Montreal, and you don't want that to happen to Larkin. So, yep.
Yeah, and Galchenyuk, like, has the ceiling to be an actual, like, star, and he is. I mean, he's really good, but his coach has misused him and played him on the wing for so long, and now that they've moved him to center, look at him. He's playing really good hockey.
All right, Upstate Nick wants to start off with the question of, is it possible the Red Wings just aren't that good? And yes, we've been talking about that for several episodes in a row. But then he goes on to an FMK. Dylan Larkin, Danny DeKeyser, Anthony Mantha. FMK.
Ooh. Okay.
I marry Larkin. Okay, this is easy. I marry Larkin. I F Mantha, and I K DDK.
Yeah, that's what I was going to do.
Yeah, that's where I am, too.
Why are you killing DeKeyser?
Well, I mean, Larkin's just a good old Michigan boy, so you got to...
Yeah, marrying Larkin is obvious.
Yeah, Mantha's all about scoring, so you got to F him.
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to K any of them.
DeKeyser's kind of... You don't notice them, and it would be kind of disappointing, and maybe... You know, it's just be very
he's the steady. Oldest so you know what, you're just moving nature along.
Yeah, like kind of has bad skin.
All right,
there you go. His face does look like the moon. It's fine.
We love you, DeKeyser, if you're listening.
We love you so much.
We do. Yeah,
killer. Please sign for cheap.
Yeah, see, I was actually gonna F DeKeyser, but you've
So you're going to K.
I mean, someone has to.
Yeah, it would be like essentially because we already, like, I'm already married to Larkin, so.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
But, whatever. Polar Baron says, why are Red Wings? Very funny. Yeah. Catfit with Blashill. Hypothetically speaking, let's say you each get to have a frank discussion with Blashill about one topic. Nothing is taboo, no feelings hurt, everything is kosher. What would your topic be?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Mine would probably be, I want to go, I'm in between player usage and what the fuck are you thinking with the power play right now?
I would probably ask him or talk to him about the perception of him as a player's coach, meaning like the kind of good, easygoing guy versus Babcock, and his reputation is kind of a more hard-nosed, tougher guy to play for, and what he thinks of that.
I mean, I think there's only one way to go with this if I'm having a frank discussion with Blashill, is would you rather fight a duck-sized Tank Grady or Tank Grady-sized duck or 100 duck-sized Tank Grady's? So, other than that, we're just kind of wasting our time.
Damn it,
Chuck. That's amazing.
See, I'd like to talk to him about the player usage, but I just know that the answer is going to be because defense, because that's essentially been his answer every time, you know. So, you know, if you ask why does Glendening get played so much, and he's going to answer, because defense. So I would essentially have to frame the topic about, like, how about scoring some goddamn goals and relying on your goaltending to maybe make up for that. Like, is your defense literally not good enough to chance offense? And what has to happen to fix that?
You could do something like, basically, like, bring up, like, War on Ice and show him the statistics and say, all right, explain to me as a head coach why we see these statistics and yet you deploy your players the way you do. What do you see that we're not seeing? Like that, because that would kind of get into his mind, right, of what he actually believes.
Oh, yeah, because specifically which statistics do you use? Because he talks about the stuff that they track. But, like, we haven't really been told what exactly that is. Yeah, that'd be a good way to do it.
Grip per 60.
Second question, do you prefer traditional Mexican tacos or American Tex-Mex tacos?
Traditional Mexican.
Now, I'm glad you followed up on that one, because I don't know the difference.
Specifically, Mexican tacos, cubed or shredded meat with grilled onion, cilantro, and a little bit of lime juice wrapped in two slightly fried corn tortillas. A lot of places, they're kind of called street tacos.
Yep.
And American meat, lettuce, tomato, cheese, and a hard or soft shell.
I'm American, and I don't like lettuce and tomato, so it's just kind of like the meat and cheese. I like Taco Bell. I just want Taco Bell.
Gosh.
That
sounds
awful.
Great right now.
Awful.
Yeah, I could go for some Taco Bell. We can go back and go drive down to Quincy, get some Taco Bell.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You don't have any close to you.
No, I have Taco Bell. There's like two of them. My buddy Matt Sell lives in Quincy. I go meet up with him. But,
you know what?
The Arby's. Mexican, we don't have Arby's.
Sound better. What?
We go to Anna's.
Boston. How do you not have Arby's?
There's no fucking Arby's. The closest Arby's is like an hour and away.
You sounded like you were from Boston when you said, no fucking Arby's.
Yeah,
get in the cab. Go to Brennerwitz.
Brennerwitz, who you sat with at the wedding table.
Sure, I remember that person.
They're getting married. Loud Boston girl and her
yes, my favorite people husband. At the wedding. Yes.
Plus Nick and Gabe, I owe them all Arby's because the Lions didn't win the Super Bowl. I don't know why they let me make that bet, but I road trip, right? Anyway, next question.
Why do you think the Wings are one of the only NHL teams not actively participating in the You Can Play project?
Because
I don't know how to answer that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have no idea.
I don't.
No clue. I mean,
and nobody's ever asked them, so you guess whatever you want to guess.
Yeah, I mean, when they came out, so for the Sochi Olympics, I mean, they asked a lot of the players about. You know, because it was the human rights issues, and I mean Zetterberg said all the things you would expect him to say and you would want him to say.
Datsuk didn't.
Datsuk did not, which was extremely disappointing. Although, to his credit, he framed it in probably the best way possible of just like basically saying, "Look, I'm Russian Orthodox, so like you kind of trail off and you get the hint, like, oh, gotcha." So, I don't know why they wouldn't be involved. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
It is a little disappointing, but
yeah.
Real quick on this one, it's been 55 years. Your thoughts on the possibility of the retirement of the Euro Twins? Z is slowing down, and Datsyuk might head back to Russia. What's your take if this were to happen? It would open up a lot of cash for free agents.
I mean, it's gonna happen. I think Datsyuk's got like maybe 1 year left. Whatever
he's
I think when
his deal, but I think he's going to sign another one.
You said two left on his deal.
I think he'll come back on a 1 year deal.
Nah, he's done when his deal's done. That's it.
So he leaves just before the new arena opens.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening.
I don't think he.
I amend my.
Cares. Statement. I mean, Doug doesn't come together. Care. If he does come back, it's for 1 year. It'll be a 1 year like five.
$5 million deal. I'm going to amend my amendment. It really depends where the team's at. If they miss the playoffs and then they struggle again next year, then I think he might be done and go to the KHL. Because if they're not going to be actually close to winning a cup or not even contending for a playoff spot, he'll go home. And I don't.
Well, yeah, I don't think. That. Yeah, because I mean he's pretty much accomplished everything except. Right. I mean he's at the point in his career. It's just he wants to win cups. So if he's not going to win a cup, he'll probably just. Because he can go play in the KHL and make, I mean, he'll make more money than he does here.
You make it sound like a money thing, but I don't think it's a money thing. I just think he legitimately loves his home country, and I don't.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I can't blame him for that at all.
I mean, he's always said he's going to move back, and I mean, when the lockout ended, he talked openly about really enjoying playing in Russia and being in front of family and friends. I mean, it's his home.
And if the Wings aren't going to be competitive, like. Not even make the playoffs competitive. Go home, Pavel. Thank you for your time here.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be okay if he does either one. I mean, I support Pavel Datsyuk with whatever he does.
It's been 55 years. Point, though, it does free up $7 million in cap space. So,
yeah,
that's a good chunk of change. Now, the question of what do the Red Wings do with it. I mean, if they go like 2012 and Lidstrom retired and just fucking blow it on
Tutu and Samuelson, and it's just like, you know what, Kanellan, go away.
I don't think they'll make that mistake again.
I don't either, but you never know.
Let's see. Zetterberg's cap recapture, if he goes this summer, is $2.1 million.
Yeah,
if he
I don't think he's
next
going.
Summer, it's $3 million. If he goes the summer after that, it's $4.3 million. Summer after that, it's $5 million.
Yeah, in terms of the team,
he's not. He's higher.
Team, it would have had to have been this offseason, this most recent offseason, for it to make the most sense for the team.
If Zetterberg retires, his back's going to flare up and he's going to go on long term IR.
Yeah.
That's
exactly what's going to happen.
He's done.
He's got it built in. It's funny how many wings have like these chronic injuries that we're just waiting to flare up so that they could go on long term injured reserve forever.
And there's always a severely strained groin.
I mean, if Pavel Datsyuk does retire after his contract is up, if you look at some of the possible unrestricted free agents that offseason, I mean, you might get a guy. You're looking at people like, you know, Kevin Shattenkirk, who will be an unrestricted free agent, and maybe a guy like, I mean, I don't think he'll go into free agency, but Jamie Benn.
Yeah, Dallas will have
They'll lock him up.
I can't imagine. Yeah, there's no way there.
You'll have Brent Burns might, maybe, you never know. But it's just, when you look at
Brent Burns, about 5 years too late.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing is that, and I really stick by this, like, building your team in free agency is such a shitty idea in the cap, in any league with a cap, like, with a cap system. It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't work like that. It's not baseball. You know, you don't have truckloads of money.
Baseball is not like that so much anymore.
Right. I mean, it's you see so many leagues changing nowadays. I mean, you look at the NFL and all the free agency and some of the contracts that were handed out to these players. It's just ridiculous. And, you know,
well,
they're not guaranteed, though. So
yeah,
like,
there's no guaranteed money.
$65 million deal and 20 of
it. I get it, but it's still. I don't know. I just don't like adding maybe one big name. So like, if you want to go out and you have the room to throw $10 million at Steven Stamkos, then yeah, that makes sense. Do it. But you know, doing that and like signing, you know, guys.
You
like,
know, I wonder. It'd be interesting if all right, maybe Ken Holland's talked to Datsyuk and he knows Datsyuk's retiring at the end of his deal, so you can throw all that kind of money at Stamkos and knowing like next year I'm getting $7 million off the books. And that's kind of like your acquisition when Datsyuk goes away.
Yeah, sure, for sure. Mm-hmm. But in terms of this offseason, it's Stamkos, and then what else is there? Really nothing.
Hey, would you rather have dick-sized nipples or nipple-sized dicks?
Can I just have what I have now? Like, is it okay like that I just keep what I have and enjoy that? How is that cheating? It's real life. It's reality.
I'd rather have dick-sized nipples because...
Really?
If I have dick-sized nipples, do I still have my dick-sized dick?
Yeah.
Yes.
Then I'm going with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because the nipples are useless, so it doesn't matter how big or small they are. They're still pointless.
I feel you could have that surgery.
You can milk anything with nipples.
All right. Is it time to go all in on the offseason? Next season being Tatsuk's last year, and probably Zetterberg's last relevant year. Ouch. Is it time to trade off some high-end assets for a top D-man, or package Gus or Tots for a real scorer? Or is this not even enough to get us over the hump? Stockpiling prospects forever.
Piling prospects forever. No,
it's all about asset management.
It really is. I mean, you can trade guys, but like... you can trump this entire question by saying, who is trading a top scorer for a guy like Gustav Nyquist or Thomas Tatar, plus, you know, whatever other crap you want to throw at him? And then who's trading a top defenseman, which is like the most highly touted premium in this league? It's just, I don't see it happening.
Well, that's where you go like truly all in, and you're like, you're really willing to gamble on Vatanen or Truba or something like that, And it's not just you're just, oh yeah, we're just going to trade Nyquist for that guy. It's like you're going to trade your first round pick there too. And yeah, I don't know. The number 13 overall has got some value.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
First round pick has value.
You're not trading for like, for what a lot of people consider to be a top D-man, those aren't available. So you're getting into that second tier, and what you have to do is you have to be opportunistic and look at Vatten, and Anaheim's a perfect example, because Anaheim's, they've got some pretty tough decisions to make, especially with the news today that the cap's only going to go up a little bit. There's not a lot of wiggle room for some of these teams, and Anaheim's already in cap problems because they've committed a lot of money to older players. So, but the key is, does Holland have the guts to make a trade like that? I say yes. I'd say you take a roster player that you have now, like a Nyquist or a Tatar, package that up with some better prospects. You can't be like, hey, here's Eric Dangrady. You have to put in a couple of better prospects, throw in a draft pick. Whatever you can do, don't give away too much. If it's a guy like Vatanen, you're not trading, all your good players and all your best prospects for Sammy Vatanen. He's one player, and he's a very good player, but he's not the final piece to the puzzle for the Red Wings.
If they missed the playoffs,
if he were 1D, he would be Anaheim's 1D.
Right.
Yeah, he's not.
And he wouldn't be being wouldn't be being shopped, or he wouldn't be out there. So, right. There's
same with Trouba.
Right. It's just, those considerations. They can talk about, with Trouba, they say, he'd be too expensive. With how important number one defensemen are, if they are worth it, you pay those guys and then you make the money work somewhere else. If you can make money work anywhere else, it's going to be in your forward, because you can spread out some cap hits in your depth, in your bottom six, in theory. Similar to what Chicago does. That's how Chicago has built their team. Is their top six is, cap-wise, is super heavy. Their bottom six, they just kind of litter with guys on cheap deals and just, guys that they kind of find and are able to bring in cheap. And if they work out, great. And if they don't, whatever. You've still got that core.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that it's necessarily, because I don't think that there is a good enough player out there to make that like really stark difference to be super duper, let's go ahead and trade the farm because we've got our next core set. I think the Red Wings are going to be aggressive in free agency this year and around the draft, specifically trades, not so much signings, but I don't think that they're going to necessarily go all in and like really trade off futures like, say, the Rangers have been doing. I just don't see it. Larkanic and Skywalker wants to know, I generally support Kenny as a GM. Heard him say multiple times that they pick the best possible players in the draft regardless of positions or how they fit in the team. Do you think this strategy has become a problem, or does it only work if you're only trading duplicates? I'm going to cut off the rest of the question right there, because the Red Wings basically have not been drafting best player only for a while. They specifically said we want more centers, and they went out and drafted a bunch of centers. They specifically said we want bigger defensemen, and they went out and drafted bigger defensemen. So it's not a case that they're ignoring players that would fit needs for better players at a different position.
Go ahead, Graham.
I was going to say I may be reading into the question a little bit, but I wonder if the question was framed more around first round draft picks rather than a draft as a whole. You look at a draft as a whole, they're drafting every position at some point in a draft. So I wonder, if you look at their last several drafts, they're picking forwards with their first picks.
Yeah, I could be reading into the question. He does specifically ask, and that's what I cut off, is should they have traded up to grab a hot defenseman?
If you think about it, yeah, and I've said this multiple times before, but trading up in the draft is usually, it's going to be a vast overpayment for what you're getting. There's a lot of talks about how the Red Wings should trade up to get Noah Hanifin. really great player, has a really bright future ahead of him, but would it have made a difference this year? No, not really. And the thing is that when it comes to first round picks, unless you are a top 10 pick, you are, you pretty much have to trust your scouting, because if you're in the top 10, then obviously it's a little bit more of the best player available type thing. And that's just how I feel about it. They scout these players, they see what they like in these players, and they take them. Now, if you're picking, last year, if you're picking first overall, you're taking the best player available. And it's going to be the same this year. It's going to be the same every year after this. It's just that's how it goes. The style of hockey drafting for me is, it's so, unless you are out in the top 10, best player available really doesn't exist. In my opinion.
Will Pocono have a place on the team next year?
I don't know.
It's not guaranteed.
I think he might get traded.
He's a guy I could see packaged, because he's still riding on the potential, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's only a season removed from being the AHL leading goal scorer, which has some appeal to it. So I don't know. I think I said this the other night in our group chat. I'm underwhelmed by Pulkkinen this year, and it's not due to usage, and it's not due to how they're deploying him. When he's on the ice, it's just meh for me. And I'm a big, I was really hoping for more.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too. Like, based on the lineup that went in Philadelphia, I would rather find a way to get Yurko back in the lineup than Pulkkinen right now, and I'm kind of okay with both of them having sat. Obviously, next year the lineup will be different, and there'll be no Brad Richards and whatnot. But
hopefully,
yeah,
or not a Brad Richards substitute.
Potentially not even a Riley Sheahan, but yeah, I don't know that Pulkkinen has a spot. It is looking more and more like he is just that one dimensional, only has a shot, and it's basically not worth it. I mean, he would bring value to a team that can basically build a line around him, and I don't think Detroit can. So,
cool.
All right, the expansion draft talk. If the expansion draft were tomorrow, who would be kept off the table? Now, let's assume basically the rules that we learned today are you can protect 3 defensemen, 7 forwards, and 1 goalie, or you can protect any 8 skaters and 1 goalie. So, who are you protecting? Basically,
any 8 skaters and a goalie.
Well, what's the rule of first and second year pros are not.
First and second year pros are not eligible to be picked. Larkin, they're automatically protected.
Larkin, Mantha, Athanasiu automatically.
And now, just to be clear here, the Las Vegas team would in theory start next season.
Right. They would start we're only going to talk about.
They would start in 17-18.
Okay.
But the draft would be held, because they talked about the draft would be held this year.
How is that? See, that doesn't that, because you can't be they pick Erickson, and then Erickson plays for the Wings for a year.
I don't know. Okay.
If it's happening in 2 off seasons,
then I don't want to look 2 years in the future. This specifically says if the expansion draft were tomorrow.
Yep, tomorrow.
Okay. All right, fine.
Pay attention.
I don't know who the hell we're going to have next year, so.
All right, so we get 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, a goalie. You're protecting Mrazek. Done.
Yeah, Mrazek's obvious. Let's not talk about goalies anymore.
DeKaiser.
Okay.
So are we doing the 8 forwards, or are we doing the 7 and
8
3?
Skaters.
Eight skaters.
I do 8 skaters.
So you can divvy them up however you want. You can fucking 6 defensemen and 2 forwards if you wanted to.
Yeah. I do 8 skaters. Because the Red Wings don't have enough defensemen to really give a shit about. So I say 8 skaters.
Who are your 8 then?
I don't know. God damn it.
Now, what about no-move clauses?
Datsuk is the only one with a no move clause.
Yeah, Datsuk's the only one, and are you really going to... Yeah.
So we assume Datsuk's already protected. He doesn't count.
The thinking is that anybody with no movement clauses will be counted against a team's protected roster.
Yeah, basically you're forced to use one of those protected players. Slots.
Yeah. Like, don't give them out. Like, this would basically be the NHL's way of saying, don't give them out then.
Yeah.
And the PA wouldn't fight that because it actually protects those players because they get to stay with their teams. I mean, that's what they wanted. They wanted a no-movement clause. This prevents them from being moved. The NHLPA would probably be on board with that.
It's such a... I don't know. This is something that I don't know if I could think this up in a matter of seconds. It would have to be something that I have to kind of sit back
and think. You're going Zetterberg, Datsuk, DeKaiser, Nyquist, Tatar, Athanasiou.
Let's say Athanasiou doesn't count.
Yeah.
Well, you're pro, is he, though? AHL pro counts, right?
If it happened tomorrow.
Is this only a second-year pro?
He has not finished his second year yet, and this is something that's going to have to get answered, because they said second year. Basically, if an expansion draft happens, it's going to happen in June. The year goes July 1st through June 30th, so Athanasiou's second year ends on June 30th. The expansion draft is tomorrow, March 17th, so Athanasiou does not count, automatically protected.
Okay.
Booyah.
Same with Mantha.
Datsuk, Zetterberg, DeKaiser, Tatar, Nyquist. It's five.
I would do
Smith,
seven,
six.
Four, three defensemen, because I don't think the forwards you'd want to keep.
Yeah, I'm like running out of forwards.
So here's, I would do Zetterberg, Tatar, Pulkkinen, Nyquist, Yurko,
Datsuk.
That's six.
Mm-hmm. You get one more.
You protect Abdelkader?
Yes.
Yeah.
Seven. There's your seven forwards. Defense, personally, we talked about this earlier, I'm protecting DeKaiser, Smith, and Marchenko. That's who I would protect. I understand the Red Wings are going to protect Cronwall. I know that. My brain understands that. I wouldn't, because I don't think anybody would take him. I think he makes too much money, and I think he's too old. I don't see a team picking him up going, yeah, he's really going to help us be competitive right away.
Yeah, I agree.
That's fair.
I think the reason you protect Abdelkader is specifically because you are... I know a lot of people don't like the contract, but as of right now, that is a good contract. And Abdelkader is the kind of player who is going to have the tradability for a long time, perhaps even before that contract turns to shit later on in his career. Basically, you don't give away a player with trade value for nothing. Essentially, if you leave him unprotected, he comes off your books. Basically, if I'm the GM of Las Vegas, I might claim Abdelkader and flip him to the Kings for something even better, and then you look like a real dumb asshole for leaving him unprotected, basically giving him away for free. So anybody who has decent trade value like that, I'm protecting him just because I'm not necessarily keeping him, but I'm definitely not letting an expansion team just have him for nothing.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you're going to have to buy a Brendan Smith Black Aces Knights jersey?
You might have to.
No, he'll be playing for Jokerit before you know it.
Join his good buddy Corey Emerton in the whatever league he's playing, and they can color in coloring books together.
TNK or Death wants to know, between players, coaches, and management, who's most responsible for the current predicament?
Players.
Yeah, most responsible? Players.
I'd say players, for sure.
They're the ones not scoring the goals.
I mean, management made the team. That is what it is. The coaches are new, and, they have responsibility in getting the players ready to play, but, ultimately it is on the players. They didn't forget how to play, so they're the ones that are not executing. Coaches can
drop a game plan and drop a system, it's up to the players to execute it. If they can't, then they need to be moved.
Yes, they're not playing as a better bubble team than they should be because of the players. I put their current predicament as defining it as not being a Stanley Cup contender. I put that on management.
Yes.
The inability to replace, obviously you can't replace Nick Lidstrom, we always have to say that, but the inability to get a number one D-man after Lidstrom's retirement has loomed larger and larger every year. So, Eight-Legged Al wants to know, is the possibility of signing Stamkos pipe dream or realistic? Real quick, yes or no?
Yeah, it's realistic.
It's realistic.
He's not improbable, agency, but it's realistic.
Definitely realistic. Will Chris asks a Tangrady-sized avocado question. We're going to skip that because...
Avocados suck.
Fuck Will Chris.
He's probably not even going to listen to this, so fuck that
right.
guy.
Because we're not likely to improve the two-cup contender in the next 18 months, thanks R. Sizzle, what would you have to get in return to convince each of you to trade Zetterberg?
His wife.
Wow.
Yeah, the wife. No, I don't know if I can answer this.
I wouldn't trade him, because then he could retire and cap recapture.
Yeah, that could fuck you hard.
And I don't think the return's going to be that great, so...
Well, let's give you first-round picks for the next, 10 years.
See, I mean, that's how you answer that question, Jeff. The
fine,
question
Eric
is,
Carlson.
There you go. See, that's an answer. Yeah.
Just go off the rails. Just
Eric Carlson and a night with his wife.
Eric Carlson and the promise that he won't retire and fuck our cap situation.
Yes.
Yeah. And Larson.
Yes.
Yep.
Larriman wants to know, let's see, it looks like Blashill could be creating an identity for his team. Speed. The lines last night had a very fast guy in each line. Your thoughts on ditching the longtime puck possession identity to a speed and force fierce forechecking identity?
Cool, let's do it. What we're doing now is not working right now at the moment, so.
Didn't they start doing that last year, though? Had a quick guy on every line.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I mean, I guess if they're going to do it, they got to build the roster to go with it. I don't mind it. I prefer the puck possession because I think if you have the puck more, you're going to be more successful. To me, that just seems to go hand in hand. So, but if you don't have the type of skilled players to be able to maintain that possession, then yeah, I mean, go for speed. What I'd like to see the Red Wings become is what kills them all the time, which is that aggressive forechecking team. It's not necessarily the, you know, kind of a dump and chase type of deal, but just, you know, when the other team's defenseman has the puck, the wing forwards are on them. There's just no let up and no, I mean, they're very, very aggressive in the offensive zone to try and get that puck back. So I guess I just answered my question that I'm more for the second one.
How do we feel if a Holmstrom from 10 years ago was on this team? So basically right after the lockout, how would fancy stats look at him? Is Advocate the new Homer? Should I be going on a special butt enlarging diet? The answer to all that is if Holmstrom was on this team, the power play wouldn't be as bad. For the Holmstrom's fancy stats were pretty good. And obviously they were bolstered by being with the Euro Twins like during their absolute primes. But Abby could be considered the new Holmstrom, but Abdelkader is not anywhere close to what Holmstrom is as a net front presence. Holmstrom did not have as many pucks bounces off him. He screened the goalie much more effectively, and he always had his stick down. Obviously, he took a lot of dumb penalties, too, like Abdelkader does. But as far as effectiveness, Holmstrom was more effective than Abdelkader is now.
They're different. I mean, it's a different effectiveness because, I mean, in front of net, absolutely. Abdelkader's skilled overall, I think. Plus, Abdelkader's got a bit of an abrasiveness, a more in-your-face abrasiveness to his game that Holmstrom never had. I think the big thing that that right now would be Holmstrom's lack of speed would be evident in at 5-on-5. No, he wasn't a good skater. That's why he worked on the line that he did. Is he didn't have to. he didn't have to be the guy that had to keep up. It's just basically, you know, just get into position. I'm fine.
He pulled that fucking piano so well.
Yep. All right. We got a lot of questions going, so I'm going to rapid fire a bunch of these. Arsizzle wants to know if the expansion draft guarantees that Erickson will never be taken because each team can't protect all their top four D-men. I think an expansion draft leaves a pretty good shot of Erickson. And I said earlier, of Erickson being taken, I kind of didn't say the opposite earlier, but when you think about it, Erickson is probably considered one of the better four D-men around the league by people who aren't watching the Red Wings every single game.
You mean people who work in an NHL front office, right?
Yeah, an expansion team is going to take 9 or 10 defensemen. I think it's pretty safe to assume that Erickson may be considered league-wide as one of the 10 best number four defensemen who won't be protected league-wide. And especially...
He's got term.
Yeah, he's got term. He's got enough cap hit that might help him reach the floor. I don't know. I don't know if I'd call it 50-50, but it's not... definitely not going to happen. Let's see. Operators, he asked about cookies. We're just going to skip that. Kilroy posted an interesting thing. There was an article that came out in Slovakia where they were talking to Tatar, where he basically said, like, talking about this season, we've got a new coach, and he seems like it's a little bit, you know, more scared or shocked. He doesn't have as much experience, and a few of his moves are weird coaching throughout the match. Basically, other people on this team see it. He puts defense first, and I've got fewer minutes, and so I've got fewer points. Just a quick take on that.
I don't like hearing that. I guess it's not totally shocking that a young coach who's in his first year in the NHL with a team with the expectations of making the playoffs might do something like that, make weird moves, but I don't like to hear it. I wish Tatar was like, yeah, he's great, and we're fully confident in him, and blew some sunshine up my ass, I guess, but...
there's nothing in there that's surprising. I mean, you know, you expect Blashill to... I mean, Blashill's got to adjust. We talked earlier about Larkin adjusting to being an NHL player for the first time. I mean, Blashill's a head coach at the NHL level for the first time. There's going to be an adjustment period. I mean, the coaches, I mean, they're game planning against each other and trying to exploit weaknesses on other teams. And, you know, I bet it's probably easier at the AHL, like everything else is. It's when you get to the top level against the top people, it becomes that much more difficult. So, I mean, Tatar... there's always been, I don't know, kind of a... He always seems like a guy who has... I don't want to say it's an attitude, because that gives off the... That's not really the impression I'm trying to get.
Well, he's not afraid to speak his mind.
He's honest. He's honest.
He shoots from the hip, yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, this year has been a struggle. I think Tatar would be... I mean, Tatar's struggled this year. I think if you asked a lot of the players, I mean, a lot of them aren't going to be like, oh, this has been the best year ever. I mean, a lot of them would probably say something similar. It's been a tough year. You know, maybe you don't get that sort of detail about what they think about the coach, but I mean, that doesn't mean that they're not... There's nothing in there that says that he's not playing, like trying to play hard for his coach, which would be a much bigger concern for me than anything else.
Yeah, what worries me... Like, the biggest concern out of all of this is the possibility, like we talked about, if Babcock had lost the room, would be kind of the follow-up to that, is that Blashill has yet to claim the room, I guess, or he's yet to grab the room. And so, yeah, that quote there's a bit of a concern there. It's like, basically, it's not his team, and the doubt there is, like, they're not buying in as much as they ought to be, and it's kind of even more worrisome than that if basically what this translated speech from Tatar is that he doesn't have the room because he doesn't seem sure enough of himself. But I I just don't believe that that's necessarily... That's the worst-case scenario. I don't believe that's what it is. All right.
All the reports, real quick, were that after he was hired, were that the players were really, really happy. So, I mean, that's not going to happen if he doesn't have the room.
He's probably just talking about all those times he threw Glendening on the ice for like 25 minutes or something in a game and matched him up against Steven Stamkos and Alex Ovechkin.
Yes. Yeah. Red Wings 26-13-5. Do you think there's any chance that Blashville's management focused less on the results of the season and more on getting the players acclimated to Blashville's system? Or do you think I'm just trying to be an optimist and finding excuses for us sucking? Yeah, I don't think they're going to throw out the playoff streak, you know, just for the sake of, like, oh, well, let's get used to Blashill's system.
You know, I mean, you look at it, look at the Flyers. They were really bad at one point in the season, like real bad. Like, not going to make it. Let's tank it out. Let's just tank another year. Dave Hextall is a first-year coach. Anything can happen. Takes time. Some longer than others. Maybe Blashill doesn't work out. Maybe something happens and he turns into an incredibly good coach. I don't know. You just don't know. You got to give the guy some time. Maybe more than one or two seasons.
All right. I'm going to pick two more questions, and then we're just going to cut it off. We had a lot. Hopefully everybody didn't get their question asked. Just ask again next week. We'll get it. Just ask sooner. This is an interesting one. Dave on 87 wants to know, with Nyquist, I've noticed in the past few games, especially, that whim writers are observing that Nyquist is either having a strong game and or period. However, during the Rankin post, Nyquist has negative review. Do you think this is because a good or a bad game is mainly dependent on him scoring, or any other possible explanation?
I can see people just, he didn't score. He sucks. Thumbs down.
Yeah, it's the scoring thing.
Yeah, when the team loses, then the Rankums are absolutely brutal. And I'll tell you, I don't know about you guys when you write recaps, but I specifically wrote that Nyquist had a good period in, like, the one recap that I've written in the last month. And that's because literally I'm going as the period goes, saying, okay, who had a Nyquist did, and it's not so much about the results he gets. And then in the post game, like, if you ask me directly after the game is over to go and thumbs up and thumbs down people, if the Red Wings lost the game that I'm mad about, I'm thumbs downing everybody. So
yeah, absolutely. I've done a lot.
I'm
going to
go ahead and say that we are more objective than the people voting in the in the Rankin post immediately after the game.
Mm-hmm. I'll always give Brendan Smith a thumbs up.
Mm-hmm.
That's bad. Okay. Let's see. They were pies. No.
Good Lord.
Oh, there's E-Dub Naz. If you could add any player from Red Wings history to the current team for the rest of the season only, who would it be and why?
Herp-a-derp. Number 5.
Yeah, Lidstrom. Lidstrom. It's our biggest need.
Oh, man. Is it bad that that was like the fourth name?
What?
Yes.
I was like,
that's wrong.
No. Oh no!
I went better. To. And then you really said, like Dougie Brown, don't you?
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know what? I actually went to like late '80s Yzerman first.
Well, I just thought Yzerman, and then I went to Howe, yeah. And then I was like, well, Fedorov, and then you said Lidstrom, and it's Lidstrom. So.
You know, that's a really good question because, yeah, I mean, all of those players are players that we need right now.
I guess so. I just immediately thought scoring. But obviously Lidstrom scored.
That's what I was going for.
But Fedorov could play defense. He played Norris-level defense.
Yep,
so
he did.
Maybe we go there, yeah. We just have him as a defenseman.
Cool. So that's the last one, right?
Yeah, we're just everybody that that we didn't ask or answer. I'm mildly sorry we didn't get to yours, but this was a heavy episode. Just ask again.
So I'll just pick three games here because I don't know when we're going to record again. Quickly, week ahead. Three games on the road. Columbus, Florida, Tampa. What the hell happens?
Whatever.
Whatever. Losses. You're going to enjoy it.
1-1-1.
That's inspiring.
Yeah. But they lose to Columbus in regulation. And they get 3 out of 4 points in Florida somehow.
Okay. I'm going to say that they lose all three just because the last time I was on a podcast, I said they were going to go like on a 7-game winning streak and then lose to the Maple Leafs to snap the streak. That didn't happen. So they're going to lose all three.
They're going to win two.
Hopefully the...
Doesn't matter which one.
Yeah. Final hockey-related thoughts?
Just get this shit over with.
Win a game.
Yes. I want to feel good.
I want to score the first goal of a game and have a lead going into first intermission.
You know what I really want?
Maybe a two-goal lead.
I want to go up against, like, Columbus or whoever. I don't give a shit who it is. I want to win like 7-0 against someone.
Well, you don't want to waste all your goals in one
game. No, I want to win 7-0 against someone. I need this. I want someone to score a hat trick, 4 goals, pull their dick out, do the little like celebration where they drag their fists on the ice. I want that.
But is it a nipple sized dick?
I don't care. It could be a nipple sized dick or it could be a semi truck sized dick. I don't care. 4 goals, rooster trick. Let's go.
Great.
Yeah, so we're going for a strong three goal first period. Outside of that, I think that I'm at the hockey fan point where if we're going to give up 3 goals in the first period, I really do, and I know it's not helpful, but just the angry fan brain, I just want to see them goon it up. I want to see somebody slash a guy in the fucking face.
I'd be cool with that.
Hopefully somebody I don't like. Doing it to somebody I don't like. But yeah, that's it. Stop making me want to see you guys goon it up.
So for JJ and Kyle and Graham, Wing It at Motown Radio.
Let's go Wings!
See you next week. Wing It.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.